Welcome to another episode of My First Job. Every time we enter a five-star hotel, we're struck by the opulence, the decor, the design, and the efficiency. But it takes a lot of work to make it happen. One of the people who knows this inside out and has known this for decades is Matharani Mathias, an old friend, and I'll refer to her as Rani. I'm sure in her class, she's one of those people who is revered, looked up to, and admired by a whole lot of her students who come from different kinds of backgrounds. And by the time she's finished with them, they're ready to enter the world and shine in it. This is episode 17 of My First Job, the podcast that covers engaging career journeys. And every single one is full of twists, turns, and insights. I'm Venugopal Nair, the host of the podcast and CEO of Ideascape Communications, an advertising agency into branding, creative, and design. Settle in, sit back, and enjoy the conversation. Or if you're one of those who likes walking while listening to podcasts, please measure your steps. Let me bring Matharani on board. Hi, Rani.
Thank you for having me, Venu. I'm happy to be here.
I think just before we started, we were talking about how you told people to take a selfie. Because I think that's a wonderful instance of how much of change comes into a person's life.
When I meet my students, usually on the first day when we have an orientation for them, my first thing that I tell students is, kindly take a selfie of yourself outside the college now, with the way you are. And keep it with you. And if you need it, take one every year at different intervals. But take one at the end when you finish college. And then note the difference in the person that you have become. I think that's the most joyous time and occasion that you will have about yourself. And that's really made a lot of difference, because there were some students who would walk into my office on the first day and I would say, what's your name? And they would not even understand what I was trying to tell them, because most probably they were from vernacular mediums. But by the time they were in fourth year, they could walk into my office and complain. And I would look at them and say, wow, I'm so happy you can do this. I feel so good about it.
Wonderful, Rani. And I don't think there are too many professions where this before and after is evident.
Yes.
I mean, if you've, let's say, done a course in mathematics, or you've done it in physics, or any one of those, year one to year four, there's probably no difference in you when you see people. So tell me, where did this whole interest begin? How did you decide in your life that catering is going to be what you want?
Good question. Now, I'm from the small town Mangalore, which hardly anybody knew about. I'm talking way back in the 80s. I always wanted to do something very different from what everyone else was doing. There was no engineering and medicine for me. And I wanted to do management. And I wanted to get out of this town. Let me be very honest. And it was my mother, I must tell you, who was an educator. And she was the one who had found out about hotel management in Bombay. And she had found out all these details. And she had told me about it. And I was in the 8th standard. Then I decided I was going to go to Bombay. That was it. From the 8th standard, I said, I'm going to do hotel management. And anytime anyone asked me, what are you going to do? I said, hotel management. They would look at me and say, what? You're going to become a waitress? I said, I don't care. I am going to do hotel management. That's how I ended up going to Bombay from a small town like Mangalore. When after my 12th standard, absolutely green in the years. I had no idea what a big town was. Always a small town girl.
So this is very relatable. When you went from Mangalore to Bombay, what were your first impressions?
I was a super confident person who said, I need to take on the world. Oh, I was raring to go. And I said I was going to take part in every activity of the college. I was going to get to know as many people as I possibly could and learn from everyone. And oh my God, did I to tell you the fact, there was so much of learning. And I must tell you, I'm so grateful to some of the teachers, some of my seniors, even my juniors, my own classmates, who in their own little ways made so much of a difference. You know, if I was doing something wrong, they would tell me this is not the right way to do it. I remember there was a teacher who, and I have to tell you this because, you know, from a small town like Mangalore in 1982, when I went to Bombay, I had no clue that there were different shoes one had to wear at different occasions. So I walk into my classroom with the so-called Bata chappals, and this teacher makes a comment in the class and he says, nobody walks into a class with Bata chappals. They are bathroom slippers. 2 days, I have not forgotten that. I was a little hurt and I kept looking down and pretending, you know, I was not wearing them. You know, sometimes we need to listen to what other people say so that we will change. At 17, 18, you also have a very big ego. Really hate it when somebody tells you that what you're doing is wrong. Right. But we need to listen if you really need. And I'm so grateful now. First day when I went to see the college, there was this one girl who showed me the college. She was my senior. But she took such good care of us, you know, something that you will not see in any other college. Took us around, showed us the whole place. Of course, she's pure and she's my friend for life. She also was my bridesmaid subsequently. But what I'm saying is, first impression I got there was people care. And that is what you really need to pay forward.
During the four-year course, was there something that stood out for you within catering or within the entire business of hospitality?
When I did my program, there were only diploma programs available in hotel management. I was very interested in food and beverage service, as well as to slightly lesser extent in front office. I certainly didn't want to do cooking at all. I remember in the second year when we had to do some compulsory training, there were, you know, internship interviews. I told the Taj had come in, and I remember telling that manager, she said, would you like to join the kitchen? I said, I don't want to work in the kitchen at all. And I really was not keen on the kitchen, though all my practicals, I looked at them as lab, and I really did learn everything, and I'm so grateful for that.
People on the outside rarely see the amount of work that goes in keeping a place and maintaining it, the standards that need to be adhered to.
See, the glamour in our industry is for the guest. Yes. Now, the person who's providing that glamour needs to work so much harder to provide that. One is, of course, the skill part. But I think mostly the two things that will really stand you in good stead. One is an attitude. That you will do something and you need to care for somebody else, that you will try and please them, as you know, within the boundaries that are there for you. Feel wanted and happy. That is one. But there also is a lot of skill one needs to learn so that you can do things fast. I remember this one incident. We used to have something called housekeeping practicals, and they were for examinations. For one particular examination, they gave me a window to clean, which was full of concrete. On a glass window, I looked at it and I said, I'm just going to give up. That was my first thought. I said, who's ever going to be able to clean this? And this was an examination. That was my first thought. And then I sat back and I looked at that window. I said, how can I say I'm not going to do this? This is what I'm supposed to do. I'm going to do it for the best of my ability. And I got the highest marks then, mostly probably for the attitude that I had that I was going to clean that whole thing. And I, you know, that always comes back to me when I'm thinking that has helped me in good stead. Sometimes when you look at things, it looks like a huge problem. And you say, I'm not going to do it at all. Then think back and say, okay, this is a problem. There has to be a solution to it. That's an attitude you learn. That is what you want everybody who's in the industry to imbibe.
You finished your diploma in catering from Bombay. What were the things that were going on through your mind?
Now, I had decided that I'd seen Bombay. One good thing about hotel school was in the 80s when I was there, and I was in college from 82 to 85. Every year for a month or two, I worked in a hotel because that's wonderful. Though they called us interns and trainees, it was a great experience of what's really going on. And it's also a good way to network. In the first year, I trained in West End, which was that time with the Spencers. Now it's with the Taj. In the second year, I trained as a waitress at Rangoli. It was a small restaurant in NCPA. Okay. Beautiful. And by the time I was in the third year, I decided I've had enough of Bombay. I've seen Bangalore. I want to go to Delhi. So I only appeared for interviews that were all coming in from Delhi. And luckily for me, all the headquarters of all the major chains like ITDC, ITC, Oberoi's were all in Delhi. So that made a lot of difference. And we used to have campus interviews. And I must say, I think I got into all those campus interviews. And finally, of course, chose ITC Welcome Group. Because Welcome Group then decided that for the first time, most of the hotel chains would never take diploma holders as their management trainees. Somehow they would only take graduates till then. It was Welcome Group who decided that they would first come and try out the diploma holders to see how we would turn out. So we were the first batch. We were three of us who got in from the Bombay Catering College. Totally, we were a batch of 12 of us from the various colleges as well as some in-house people from ITC. And okay. So I landed in Welcome Group, Maurya Sheraton in Delhi. And so when my dad said, how is it that you're getting all the jobs in Delhi? I was telling him, what to do, Dad? All the headquarters are in Delhi. So that was my story.
As a trainee, how did you handle difficult customers? When you're out on your own, you don't have the experience and you come across a particularly rude or an unfeeling customer.
Okay, I have to give you a little brief of what this training was all about. All right. And I think that was one of the best things that I really went through, like kind of molded my entire ideas of how to look at this industry. So they put us through there were a few classroom sessions because, you know, we were like these waves from all these diploma colleges. They had to kind of get us into the culture of what Welcome Group was all about, which was very good. Then they put us in every department. I worked in the kitchen, in front office, in housekeeping, in food and beverage service. Also in engineering, kitchen stewarding, departments you may not have heard. Food and beverage controls and stores and everything. To such an extent, I've also done the job of a bell girl, job of a room attendant. What it makes you do is this, that when you're doing that job, you know you're not going to do it for the rest of your life. You're going to do it just for a week. But the best part about it was you internalize what you feel when you're doing those jobs which nobody really wants, nobody sees them. But if those jobs are not done correctly, you cannot do service and you can't provide the luxury to guests. I have such great regard for people who have to do it for the rest of their life. It taught me how to deal with those people. That is one. Secondly, how to do things right the first time. So one day we were in housekeepers' uniforms, these maids, chambermaids' uniforms. Next day we were in managers' uniforms. So the same guest who saw someone, you were there in that uniform yesterday and today you're in a manager's uniform. So we had to show our badge and say, oh, we are hotel management trainees. Really good experience, you know. And my first day in the kitchen, I have to tell you this, the butchery is one department in the hotels. All your meats are taken and cut to the sizes or shapes that you need. So on the first day, they said, oh, aagai bandi. Their attitude was, you're going to become a manager, you better learn how to do. Gave me 250 chickens. They told me you need to skin these in 1 hour. And they had this look on their face that you're never going to be able to do it, girl. Let's see how you do it. Unfortunately, they didn't know what Rani Matas was all about. I was Rani Matas. When I did it, of course, the next day I was massaging my arms. You know, then the respect they had. Here's a person who really knows what she's doing. And that's the reason why I keep telling people, learn the skill. It's very important. When you need to show people, you know, that's what will call you.
One more. That's very evident, Rani, that you have a lot of fans and your own work ethic and your skill has defined. How long were you at Welcome Group?
I was with them for 3 years. I trained with them at Maurya Sheraton. And then got posted to Chola Sheraton. And my first posting, I think in 86 in November. My first job really was that of a nightclub manager. I was not even 22. I have to tell you this story. So I celebrate my 22nd birthday. And one day, and that too on Christmas night, all my staff, there are guests waiting. In fact, I was in charge of this restaurant called Sagari. It was a very well-known nightclub in Chennai then. That was Madras at that time. There are guests waiting. All my waiters and the captains, everyone decide to just not do anything. So there are tables which have not been cleared. People are waiting and everyone's doing their own thing. So I decided, no, this is not happening. I can't have you. So I went around clearing tables, setting the tables, not saying anything, taking the orders, seating them all off, and just continuing as if nothing had really gone wrong. Believe me, Venu, I've never had any problem in that restaurant after that, because they could not believe that here was someone that young who could actually do whatever was needed in the restaurant. When I was there, I also had to move to front office because I got married then in 1987. I was doing this crazy shift when I joined Chola. We were just three managers. We used to have complaints in the room service. So all the managers said, sorry, one of us always stays back in the night and handles room service in the morning. And they looked at me. Nobody even thought, okay, here's a woman, she needs to go home. Nothing. In fact, those days there was gender parity. So I said, fine, I'll stay back in the night and in the morning I will take care of room service. So then come back to my restaurant in the afternoon as well as in the night. And this went on, I think, till about 2 weeks before I got married. So I had to then go to the general manager and say, you know, this is not happening. So, and then when I got married and came back, then they said, please come and then I joined. So it was a totally different thing. This, I was there as assistant manager doing what is called as an afternoon shift from 1 o'clock till 10 o'clock in the night every day. Then was shifted to Manjaroon in Mangalore. That's when I was expecting my little fellow. So I think I was walking around with this huge stomach in the lobby and the guests could see my son kicking. And that's when a welcome group had started workshop. And they desperately needed teachers to teach. And then my general manager said, I think you better go there and teach instead of walking around here in the lobby and all the guests getting worried. I moved to Waksha then to teach students front office. I think I started teaching, if I'm not mistaken, in the beginning of 88. So I have, really speaking, had the luck of teaching the first 5 batches of Welcome Group School. Effectively, I should say, the first 5 batches of Hotel BHM, what they call as the Bachelor of Hotel Management, in the entire country, because only Mangalore University had BHM then.
Tell me, did this taking the initiative come instinctively?
With me, I realize, see, I'm one of those persons, I don't sit there and grumble about life. I have one motto in life. You have only one life to live, so live well. There's no point in wasting your energy on things that you cannot change. You will get angry. Yes, and I was very angry when I had to quit the hotel line, and because my child was born, my husband was sailing. Not that I wasn't angry with myself and with the situation that I was in. But then I realized, what is the point of being angry? Life is still to be lived. And what else can I do? I never wanted to get into teaching. In fact, in college, when somebody tried to sound me out in the final year, saying that, would you like to do this? I will never teach. All that I've said I'll never do, I ended up doing. When you sit back and start thinking, I said, there's no point in crying. Let me just do the next best thing. If I can't be in the industry, I've learned so much. And since Mangalore had started hotel management colleges, in fact, Mangalore was the first place to start hotel management college. I have this funny story. I was one day teaching in one college. By the end of the week, I was teaching in all the hotel management colleges in Mangalore.
You must have been one of the few really qualified and trained and experienced.
Exactly. Yeah. In fact, somebody told me, you're overqualified, ma'am. I said, I don't mind. I just need to do something. That was amazing. And that's when I realized, okay, I can teach. Teaching is, you kind of have to sit back and think. Remember, you're in charge of somebody else's life, effectively. You know, what they're going to learn. There's a lot more responsibility there. Most people don't take that. I used to see my mother doing it as a teacher.
Right.
I remember how much of trouble she took with the students, with the teaching. She would prepare every day for her classes. And that is something that I did. Even after 20 years of teaching, I would never go into a class without preparing for the class.
The person who vowed that she would never teach ended up
teaching.
What was it like in the initial years in Sarosh when you took over? You must have been one of the youngest principals ever.
Yes. In fact, I'll tell you what had happened. When I was called to see the college and be the principal, I looked at this person who called me and I laughed and I said, never. I kept quiet about it. I was barely about 27. Then I went to my mother one day. My husband was sailing then. I said, you know, these head days have actually called me to run the college. And I said, no. She looked at me and she said, are you nuts? And then these are the words she used. She said, are you nuts? You are qualified. Okay, nobody gets asked for something like this. All right. And they're the best people to work with. Why do you not just take it up? So when she told me that, I said, let me think about think about it. And I went for the interview, I still remember. I told them, they were all looking at me. I had half a mind to tell them, you know, I'm just come here in place of my mother. I also had parents who come in and said, where's the principal? I said, no, she's just gone out. So then I went and told them very, very clearly. I said, see, I have really not run an institution. I am an administrative person. I'm from the hotel industry. One thing I can tell you, I've taught in so many of the colleges. I know what not to do. I may not know what to do, but I certainly know what I should not be doing. Another thing I told them, I said, see, I'm going to make a lot of mistakes. I want you to stand by me strongly. You can take me into the office and say whatever you want to say and, you know, face me. But in front of my staff and students, please stand by me. And I must tell you that Mr. B.R. Hegde, who was our trustee and my mentor especially, you know, he told me one thing which I really, I thought it was so wise. He said, Mrs. Mathias, he said, only people who do nothing make no mistakes. It's okay, you make your mistakes, but please tell us whatever you have done so that we will be able to batch. Before I would do something, I would actually go to him and say, you know, is it okay, we're going to try and do something like this? And he would say yes, but and would give me a totally different perspective. And at this stage, I must tell you, very few people are very lucky to get very good mentors. Okay, I've been very lucky to all, I must say. You know, whenever I've needed someone, help has just come away. That's what I'm really grateful for. I remember in college, one or two teachers, there was one Mr. Shetty, at the right time, you know, he kind of mentored me. He may not even know about it, but he did. There was some teachers who just motivated you even without knowing that they motivated you. Some of my own students have come and told me certain things. You know, said, ma'am, this is not right what you're saying. And I've accepted it, which is fine, because sometimes, you know, you do things and you're on a different level and they're on a different level. So I start one rule. I say, these are the rules we will have in the college. If you think they're redundant, we'll take them off. Please convince me. But if you cannot convince me, I will convince you. And once there's a rule, the rule is sacrosanct. And I will monitor. And I will suppose. And then I also told them another thing. Let's follow the rules of the world, because you're all going to get into business. You're not a thief until you're caught. So you need to be very careful. Now, if you do things I don't know about it, good for you. That is the way of the world. I'm very happy for you. I get to know about it, you're crucified. And one or two of them gave themselves on platters to be crucified.
Tell me how the curriculum evolved or how your teaching evolved.
Now, this is where, you know, I am one of these people. I am somehow hardwired to tell the truth the way I see it. I will explain why something is wrong. But there's one more thing that I learned when I was a girl, which I think was very, very important. And that would be very important for everybody who's listening here. On the first day when we joined Welcome Group, the Manpower Development Manager, who was Sudhir Anjus, he came to all of us and he said, you are now managers. We will treat you like managers. So you need to start thinking like managers. And the difference between staff and managers is only this. The job is the same. But the difference is in the thinking. Managers will come with solutions to problems. We may not accept your solution, but come with the solution, because that shows that you're thinking. And I think that really stood in very, very good stead. And that was the same thing that I told the students also. When I came in into the college, I looked at the syllabus and I realized it was purely pathetic. Pathetic in the sense that students were doing financial accounts, that of CAs in a three-year program, marketing of marketing managers, engineering of engineering students, okay, and they were not doing enough in terms of what hotels really require. I wrote a 6-page letter to the VC.
Okay.
Mentioning exactly what was wrong, how to correct it. The person that I also said in the end, since I've opened my mouth, I'm willing to be part of the change. I think the VC actually read it. Somebody came to check our college institution. So the person who came to check, because all our colleges are there's a commission, the inquiry committee that comes in. So the head of this committee told me, he says, ma'am, is there anything that you want changed in the program? So I told him, sir, I'm willing to write and tell you. And this was in the evening. He says, I'm meeting the VC tomorrow morning. If I give it to you in writing, will you hand it over to the VC? He said, yes. Same time, you know, in those days, were typewriters. There was no computers. I typed it and I gave it to him. And the VC called for a meeting within a week. And he said, is this true? Called all the principals. And everyone said yes. He says, why was I not told? And I'm so grateful to that VC. Then he looks at me straight. I'm this youngest among all these teachers. He looks at me and says, since you opened your mouth, I'm putting you in charge. You get it all sorted out the way you think it needs to be sorted out within a month, and we will bring it into the next, you know, in the next academic year. And he did that. Okay. And I must tell you, you know, our the Nitti Education Trust, our president, Mr. Vinay Hegde, when I told him this was happening, he says, go ahead, do it. You know, we will give you all the resources you require. Don't worry about the expenses. And we were sitting for 1 month. You know, that time they needed 50 copies, Cyclo style, I can't tell you.
Yes.
We were giving breakfast, lunch, dinner to anybody who was there who was doing the work. But we were able to bring in the change. And I keep telling people, when you are in a position to bring about change, when you know that something is wrong and you know how to correct it, open your mouth, tell people. Okay, you never know when somebody is listening and you can bring about it. Our problem, I think, is where people do not care enough or they're too scared to, you know, bring about the change.
I think that's the crucial part, that a lot of people have solutions, but yes, they're not prepared to put in the work to make those solutions happen.
Absolutely. And you need to go that extra mile.
It's one thing to say, this is what is wrong. And then the question is, so what are you going to do about it? And then that's the point at which a lot of people step back and then say, no, that's not my problem.
That I'm really grateful to that Mr. Sudhir Andrews. I don't know where he is now, but I'm so grateful for what he told us. And we were, I think, about 25 of us listening. I don't know whether everyone took it to heart, but I thought that was one of the best things, you know, best learnings ever. Personally believed, and this is what I will do. If I can, if I know it can be changed and I can be the agent of change, I will go ahead and say. Now, of course, I'm older. I don't have that zest.
Do you think the culture of a place is reflected by the person who's heading it?
Yes.
Or is it something where it comes down as a set of, okay, this is how we do things? Or do you think that it keeps changing with time?
Okay, that's a good thing that you asked me. I must tell you, when I started the college, I first caught hold of, we were just 3-4 of us. Started with 12, 11 students, the 12th one joined the second year. There, we were two of us teachers, there was another part-time teacher. There would have been one attender. I said, I'm from the hospitality industry. I do not know how colleges are run. I don't want to run the college like all other colleges are run. We are going to bring in the hospitality culture. We are not going to be pressing the bell for the PO. Let him do his own job. I even went to Mr. Hegde and I told him, please give me a computer. I will type my own letters because this is ridiculous. I'm not going to dictate the letters. Then correct what she's doing, the typing. I would rather do them myself. It saves us a lot of time. The other thing that I told everybody in the college as the staff, I said, when you're meeting parents, okay, and when you're meeting students, let's not have this government attitude. I'm sorry I'm saying this, but you know, being very honest. Let us put everything together. Tell them, this is what you need to bring. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Let's give them a time. And let's finish it up within that time because everybody's time is important. And I said, look at every student. And this is what I keep telling. See, we are a self-financing college. And I said, look at every student as your salary. It makes a lot of difference. Okay, the minute you look at everybody, every customer as your salary, every student as your salary, you look at everyone, your entire thinking changes. So I would allow anyone to walk into my office and say anything. Only thing is, I made very sure, I told the students, you have to learn a few things, knock on the door, okay, and say, good morning, madam, or good afternoon, madam, or whatever. If you're writing a letter, write it properly. And I've had people, you know, I've corrected them. This is, you need to correct, go write it again and bring it back. All right, and I have people just walking and I said, will you please go out, knock on my door and please come in. I think this culture needs to be brought in. And I'm happy that it's continuous. See, ours was also a hospitality industry, so it was easier.
And Sarosh, the institution has always been self-financed. The students pay their full fee.
Yes, correct. So the students pay, which is perfectly fine. I have nothing against that, okay? We received it, everything. In fact, there was a joke in this college that, you know, I realized I'd gone to Singapore many, many years ago. And I said, I love the fine culture because there's only one thing that students understand. Students understand fines. I would tell them, these are the rules. You don't follow the rule. I'm going to fine you. I'll give you a receipt for the fine. That receipt would go into what is called as the student activity fund. We would bring out a college magazine. And I told them on the last page, we will write your names as saying that we thank our sponsors. Now, please explain to your grandchildren when you show this book as to how you sponsored it.
that is a really neat sponsorship idea. The unwilling sponsor.
Absolutely.
And somebody will never forget why their name is in that particular.
Correct. Exactly. And so what happens is, see, they don't believe you in the beginning. So they break the rule. So you need to be very, very firm the first time. So if you're very firm for the first two times, then the message passes down. And this is how it happens. So the message goes for the first 3 years. Then, you know, the people forget. Then somebody else on the fourth year will try again. Then again, you do the same. So that really works.
See, the other thing, Rani, at least as far as, you know, let's say from 20, 30 years ago versus today, the obsession with placement, I don't think it was as strong as it was 20 years ago. People kind of felt that they could get a job. And today, what is the change that has happened there?
Okay.
How have you managed it?
Let me put it this way. I've always believed, and I told the students this, because many parents would come and say, are you guaranteeing a job? And my simple thing was, if I had to attend the interview, I would guarantee you the job. Anyway, I'm not giving you any guarantees. But what I will guarantee you is this, that if your student follows whatever we are doing here in the college, takes part in all the activities, takes part in everything that is there, I can assure you, I said, I can guarantee you that he will be employable. Now, this is something we really need to go from getting a job to be employable. There are two different things.
Yes.
See, having a job is not security. Being employable is security. And believe me, and I'm really very happy to tell you, I had students who, you know, who thought I was a tyrant. And believe me, in my younger days, I was a tyrant in the college. I was really a tyrant. But I would also explain to them why I would do so. Because college was sacrosanct. And I must say that at some of their functions, I've also taught them how to dance. But that was behind the thing. Because we are a hospitality institute, I don't think you needed to stand on your high horse and say you're a teacher or I'm there or I'm a principal. That doesn't work anymore. That's the culture that doesn't work. What you do is that you give them skills. We have different activities for different levels of students. Like I tell you, our first years will conduct maybe on a hospitality day. They will go to an ashram and feed them. They will cook. And they're pulling in the money. So what happens is it's nice for them also to know what there is another lot of kids, okay, who cannot afford. You know, so you're also getting empathy. You're getting them to, you know other students. The second years are supposed to conduct an intercollegiate competition. The third years, of course, they do a team dinner where, you know, they will plan everything just like in a restaurant. And the final year, will have different. So you need to have activities. That is what you really do, so that you can get them to be made employable. And I think that's sorted out.
No, that's an amazing point.
When you know people are good, okay, you need to give them the freedom to go ahead and do whatever they are capable of.
I know for sure that I'll give this a double vote. You are a super chef as well. Being a great chef, in addition to being all of this, because yes, it is part of the overall hospitality industry. But for some people, that alone is a passion. Or they say, I like interacting with people. The entire experience is not, it's a combination of all of these things. It's not, you can't just take one ingredient. You can't take a great dish and say, I like only this aspect of it. Sometimes that has to be there because that's what gives it that depth of flavor or whatever it is that needs to get
absolutely back. Very true. And that is why for me, and this I learned from my mother, and she did tell me, I once watched her taking a class. She just told me one thing. She said, you know, even if the teacher is boring, learn to listen because that will imbibe discipline in you.
Yeah.
And no learning is wasted learning. I really was not interested in cooking at all. I did it in hotel school only because, you know, it was a very major subject and there was a recipe, you followed it, it came out very well. But when I joined the hotel and I went and told them, I told these chefs, I was among 250 chefs, I was the only girl there at Moria. And I went there with this chip on my shoulder, so I'm never going to join the kitchen. And I really don't like cooking. So there was this one chef who said, no, by the time you finish with us, you will really enjoy. And believe me, I really started enjoying. What did they do differently? One is they made me open my eyes to the real ingredients, which were not available in the college. They taught us technique. They said, make mistakes. I was in 1985. I have taken 2 kgs of chocolate, which was like Lindt kind of, you know, really great chocolate. The chef told me, go and melt it. I had never worked with chocolate. I take this 2 kgs of chocolate and put it on fire. That is one thing that you never do. That 2 kgs of chocolate burned. I got saved from being kicked only because I was a woman.
So it wasn't burnt caramel, it was burnt chocolate.
Burnt chocolate. And you know, with anything else that is burnt, you can save it. Burnt chocolate has to be thrown in the dustbin. You cannot do anything with it.
And after all the processing that moves it to that level.
But, you know, I learned that just when I realized I have to ask. If I don't know, you need to ask.
Yes.
There's no shame in asking. And that's when, of course, I really was exposed to international chefs. There was an Irish food festival, and I've never tasted such wonderfully tasting Irish food. Till then, all this continental food was really bland. But that's when I realized there's a way to bring out flavor. And that is what you really need. And then, of course, cooking is good. At least you know what's going into your own food. That is something, and I truly believe now, is a gender-neutral life skill. Learning
to cook. Especially today, where irrespective of where you are, you're a student at some point in time. And rather than eat out or keep ordering, I think the best thing to do is to rustle up something yourself. And it's got so insanely easy to make food. The ingredients are available. Devices are available.
Not only that, I'll say YouTube and social media has democratized so much of information. Use an excuse saying that if you can't cook, you're not looking after yourself. I thought my son to cook is a very good
thing. Yeah, that's true.
But I would also cook.
Which I would expect. Because you do the same kind of management skills that you bring to bear in running an entire organization. I'd be very surprised if you didn't use some of those techniques at home.
Well, my husband's not going to watch this show, and I'm never going to let him watch this show.
Students who are entering the field today, what are the things that they have to contend with going forward?
Upper middle class families, you're coming from, you know, A-class cities and metro cities and all that. You're exposed to a lot. What a hotel management program really does is it improves your interpersonal skills, one. Mm-hmm. It also gives you a view into lifestyle. And it also improves your customer relations.
Right.
And that really stands in good stead, not only in the hotel industry, everywhere. We have a batch of 85 students in the final year. Only 25 of them are willing to go for interviews of hotels. Because they've done their training for 6 months. They really know what hotels are. They're being taken by other organizations, service organizations, at much higher salaries. This is what I have to tell students. When you come to hotel management school, come with a very open mind. Okay, come to learn. Come to change yourself. Because ultimately, that is what is. And come with the right attitude. And when I say a right attitude, an attitude of caring enough to doing your best. And your best may not be the best of somebody's, but that doesn't matter. It needs to be your best. Secondly, learn to communicate. So there's a lot of communication that you really need to have in this.
Right.
We do train them towards this. And so you will see people who can barely say one sentence in the first year being able to do presentations by the time they come to the final year.
It's amazing because some of these things, for example, handling a particularly difficult customer. Now, you find that if the person is blowing that top off, the best thing is not to intervene.
Absolutely.
To allow that to just dissipate to the point where they don't have anything more to say.
Absolutely. We teach them all these things. In fact, my subject, how to handle complaints. Okay. And my first thing was listen. Okay, make eye contact. We'll teach you body language to use. Okay, what we call it is active listening, empathetic listening. And don't take it personally. See, that's another thing that people need. That when you're doing a job, people are not saying things about you as a person. They don't know you as a person.
Yes.
You shouldn't take things personally. They're talking to you for the designation that you have.
Yes.
Because you really kind of get it over a period of time. And you can always help. You remember your brownie point on attendance. Yes, I know. My God, believe it. I did this to some of them. Yes, I told them, if you get 100% attendance, I will give you lunch. I did that with a group in Welcome Group. One of my class, my batch of 45 students, they were not even answering the class internal tests and all that. And I'm a very tough cookie. So I said, no, I will only give you the marks for what you deserve and what you've shown, you know, in your test. So, and in the end, they said, what is this? And I said, see, let me have a deal with you. If all of you get a first class and they were in Manipal, I said, I will host all of you in my home and I will cook for you. To my great surprise, all 45 of them got 65% marks and more. And I had them over at my house and each one of them told me what they wanted. And
whoa.
I cooked for them. You know, they all came from Manipal.
So they were eating your words for once.
Yes. That's another thing. If you say you're going to do something,
there's a wonderful combination of understanding what people will respond to, understanding the skills that they need to master, giving them the space to figure things out for themselves, and then being tough in all the places where it matters again. Never about one thing. It's like a perfectly made dish. It has all the flavors, and they all come together in a way that people can't forget. If you were to look back, what are the points which come back as defining?
The students whom you never thought, okay, would do well. And I have to tell you this, I think I must start here. There was one student who had joined, he had no clue about English. I didn't think he would be able to do the program. So I actually told his father and I said, you know, why are you putting him here? You're wasting your money. Why don't you put him in another program? He was a Gujarati student. You know what the father told me? He said, ma'am, I have the money. I can put my son in business. I want him to come here so that he at least he's used to a little bit of English. Not going to be able to study. Don't worry about that part. I'm not going to hold you responsible. But if he's within this environment and he learns a little bit of English and he learns to interact with people, that's good enough for me. And he was there for a year. I mean, the student really couldn't manage for more than a year. There have also been students where I have told the parent, please take your child. I didn't tell the management then, because when you're in a management college, every student matters. But I have actually told a few parents, please take your child back, because he'll do much better in some other program. And I must say, those students have really done much better in those other programs. At the same time, I must say, there were one or two students who said, we can't go through this at all. I remember there was one student who comes to me and in a month and he said, ma'am, I'm doing everything. I am studying. I'm doing everything. You know, unlike the others, I cannot, nothing is showing. So I told him and I said, now, please don't quote me. He's old enough now and I can say this. I said, don't quote me, but please go outside and talk to some girls. Talk to them as human beings. And a day before the examination, please go to sleep. If you've done all your studying, 8 hours of sleep, believe me, makes a lot of difference. Okay? And believe me, he came back and said, what you said was right, ma'am. I said, don't quote me. I remember there was one really brilliant student, somewhere slacking, right, and not giving his reports and his book, you know, journals on time. And the time had gone off and we were very tough. And he said, he will not do the mask. But I caught hold of the student one day and I said, see, please do this because I know you're very capable. Okay, and I don't want you to lose. I don't know what's going on with you in your mind, but please do this and I will give you the marks. The student went on to get the first rank for our college. And I'm so grateful for that. See, sometimes, you know, what you have to do is not just the students who are not doing very well that need your guidance. Sometimes students who are very good also need your guidance. You know, mentoring is really, really very, very useful. Because, you know, it doesn't come with a baggage. You're not putting someone, you're not getting someone in the office. Because when somebody comes into your office and says, what did I do wrong? It's just that by the way, you know, you could. And then when students come back to me and say, ma'am, you know, we are doing, actually, they're doing so well. There is this one boy, Joman, who was in MasterChef of UK. And then he writes back, ma'am, I'm in MasterChef of UK. He sends me all this. And thanks to you, I said, oh my God, I feel so humble, really. Because you did it all because of you. You had the interest, but thank you for making me.
Well, I think it's always a two-way street. And students learn from you because you learn from them. And this bond is something that is very unique. I don't think it can be reduced to a single statement of, this is what I did so that this happened. In a lot of these cases, you may have said something in an offhand way.
Correct.
But because it was the perfect thing to say or it made an impact at that point in time,
absolutely,
the student changed. And yes, you were lucky to have mentors. What started this whole thing off was your never say die attitude of being pushed into the hardest of situations and then say, not that I can't do it, but let me do the best that I can and let's see what happens from there. Incidentally, absolutely, how do you clean that concrete?
Oh my God, I'll tell you, I looked at it, I took a scrubber, you know, and I kept on scrubbing it, counting 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Then I was determined. I said, this is going to show what I am. And it really didn't.
I think it's been a truly remarkable journey. Yeah. And it's been as insightful as I thought it would be. Thank you for sparing the time. And it's wonderful to have heard from you, Rani. And thank you again for coming on board My First Job and giving us a glimpse of your career journey and how fascinating it's been.
Thank you, Vinu. Thank you for having me. And I wish everyone the very best. Just remember, there's only one life to live and live it.
That was Matarani Matthias. Her career journey was another thing that a whole lot of students have been a part of, and they've had the opportunity to really learn from her and apply those learnings in their careers. Another week, another episode. We look to meet you. Thank you. My First Job, the podcast, is a production from Ideascape Communications. Guest relations, promotions, and creative is managed by Deepa Ravi with occasional support by Venugopal Nair. Archiving and technical help is provided by LPS Jayachandran.